Where do you go for comics new and old?
Garage sales?
Wrong! Where do you see your favorite television and movie stars?
In magazines, mostly.
Wrong again! And where do you go to see the best in cosplay?
Well, there are lots of different options if you're looking for something...
So incredibly wrong! Wizard World Comic Con. Wizard World Comic Con offers live entertainment and gaming, comics new and old, cosplay, toys and memorabilia, and a chance to meet your favorite television and movie stars. Meet Star Trek star William Shatner and Hellboy's Ron Perlman July 13th through the 15th in Boise, Idaho. Then, meet Gotham stars Robin Lord Taylor and Sean Pertwee August 3rd through the 5th in Winston-Salem. Then, meet Guardian stars Dave Bautista and Pom Clementia and the Winter Soldier Sebastian Stan August 23rd through the 26th in Chicago, Illinois. For news, celebrity updates, and tickets to future shows, go to wizardworld.com. Don't feel like paying full price? No problem. Use promo code CANDAIR at checkout.
No space.
To get 10% off your tickets. So, where are you going to go for your pop culture fix?
The internet?
Oh, good answer.
Really?
No! Wizard World Comic Con.
Go to wizardworld.com for tickets.
Whoa, dudes, Michelangelo here from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original one! Yeah, and you are listening to Canned Air Podcast. It happens to be a tribute to comics and pop culture, like yours truly, Cowabunga!
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I am Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And joining us today to talk about the third issue of his comic Prometheus, having just been successfully funded on Kickstarter, we welcome comic creator and American darling Ryan Little. Thanks so much for being with us, Ryan.
Thank you. American darling, not a Russian. American darling spy.
All right, in our retro roundtable today, we're going to be taking a look at side characters that should have their own films.
This fertile ground, and I'm pretty sure most of what we discuss will end up being a movie within the next 5 years.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. But I was having trouble with this one, so I'm anxious to see what you guys all came up with. Then we're going to swing open the door to the comic vault. Guys, what do we have?
Eat More Bikes. It's a simple little comedy webcomic, sticks to the four-panel format, the fourth always being wildly off the wall, and I love it.
You're good at picking these things. I'm excited.
I've got a particular set of, you know, preferences when it comes to comedies.
Jack, what about you?
Mine is the one that made us change the segment to the Comic Vault. Preacher.
Oh, that's right, because...
Valentino, was that his name? He didn't want to dump on it because he thought it was weird.
Yes.
Language barrier. Fix,
yes,
but,
good times.
How'd you put it? What did he say? It's a very good comic.
I don't want to dump on it.
He was such a cool guy, though. Yeah. So cool. A few of the things we'll be talking about there. Then we're going to turn our full attention over to Ryan and talk about the third issue of Prometheus. But before we do all that, Jake.
Twitter and Instagram, the twin beating hearts of Canned Air in a very poor analogy.
That's the truth. My God, is that ever the truth? If you ever look at our like ratings of where top downloads come from, it's like one building of Twitter and then nothing else.
So, that being the case, it would sure mean the world to us if you went down to Twitter and followed us. We are at Canned Air Pod, and on Instagram, we are at canned_air. That's where you can get all the news, episodes, funny pictures, moving pictures. GIFs are good. Everybody likes those. If you pronounce it GIF, you don't need to listen to the show. You need to leave the state and the country and not speak to anyone. Also, if you're attending a Wizard World convention in the nearest future, use promo code CANDAIR to save a cool 10%. That is lowercase, no space.
This is true. And, you know, I just want to remind our listeners that we are, you know, in other places other than just iTunes and on Twitter. You can find us on iHeartRadio, yeah. Player FM, Google Play. If you have a Google Home, all you have to do is say, Well, I'm not going to say it because then mine will... Oh, shit. See, it's... Use it to my ears. They already turned on. But you can ask that thing over there to play the show, and it will. It will.
Doot, doot, playing Candair.
We're on all formats, so check us out anywhere you're listening. I guess that's kind of stupid if they're already hearing this. Anyway, let's just get on
Continue to do this.
Let's just get into the retro roundtable.
Do it. Do it!
Come on! I'm here! Come on! Do it now!
Oh, my God! It's so pretty!
Grass tastes bad.
All right, guys. Side characters that should have their own films. I want to start with Ryan on this one. Ryan, character should have its own film.
Yeah, so I ended up breaking these in the kind of two categories, which were original movies and then franchises, aka Star Wars characters that should have their own movies. but my number one by far was Colin Firth's character from Kingsman.
Dude, excellent choice.
That movie really, I find that movie to be surprisingly divisive. I love that movie, and some people are happy to fan out with me, and then some people hate my guts for mentioning how much I love that movie.
No, I love the hell out of it.
Who is he? Galahad?
Galahad, yeah.
Okay.
How could anybody not like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The second one was good.
I still haven't seen the second one yet, but the first was freaking awesome.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah, first one's great.
I'd be very down with that. That'd be fantastic. He could absolutely carry that movie. He was the best part of the first one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't care about Eggsy.
No.
I think James.
Not his family.
James Bond almost belongs or functions better in a period piece, too. So if it was young Colin Firth, we'd probably be in mid to late 70s or else early 80s, which I think would be a lot more fun as well.
That would be cool.
Yeah, you know, that's something you just said. James Bond works better in an earlier time setting. And I think that's very true. Nowadays, you know, he was so much of a Casanova, and kind of the way he would come on and treat and talk to women, it's not a very acceptable thing nowadays.
There are a lot of the cool things about James Bond are very dated concepts.
Yeah.
Espionage is a really different thing. They're not going to have some highly trained dude in the field gathering all this intel. There's going to be a team of sweaty cyber technicians in a warehouse somewhere hacking emails.
Yeah, the gentleman spy is over now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just need to rejuvenate it maybe somehow. James Bond 2.0 or something. I don't know.
This time they he's figure fat out in a basement.
They just gotta figure out what the tone is. There's some of these modern movies where I think the villains are all just like people in tasteful wardrobe with like connections to illicit like government spy operations. It all comes back to like government spy operations and floppy disks or like DVDs with intel on them. Like I'm not saying the laser satellites were what made James Bond fun, but somewhere along the way they just stopped finding interesting things for their villains to do.
Yeah,
and I think just for some reason that 70s 80s landscape, you can do whatever the hell you want, and it just works for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
Sky's the limit and that kind of thing.
You could really feel the separation of where that started to not work in the Pierce Brosnan movies. Some of the things in those movies, like even like watching them in the theater, was like, oh, okay, come on.
You're the little two out there. Yeah.
Back up a little bit. But
Die Another Day doesn't count.
No. I haven't seen those in forever, but I remember them, you know, watching them back in the day. They were entertaining. I just can't imagine that they've held up in the slightest.
I don't think they'll age very well,
No, not at all. And I haven't seen...
No, that Cheryl Crow theme song just keeps getting worse, too.
And I can't imagine... I haven't seen the new ones either. Are they any good?
Spectre, I thought, was a little disappointing.
What was the first one? Casino Royale, was that the first?
Casino Royale.
Yep.
That's one I've seen that one.
I enjoyed Casino Royale.
I kept falling asleep, man. Like
it's not action packed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how James Bond always was, though. There's a good chase.
There was a good balance, though. Yeah. There's a good balance of action and
Casino Royale was good. Quantum of Solace, I don't think anyone remembers.
Yeah.
No. But I thought Skyfall was very good because they made him Batman. And that's always good.
Hmm.
You know what's amazing is that, you know what, so Casino Royale was a very stripped down, kind of no-nonsense James Bond movie, and the reason it was like that is because they delayed Bond movies for, I think, 6 years because of how successful Austin Powers was.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, they. Just, I mean, Austin Powers is a billion-dollar franchise. Isn't that crazy?
Austin Powers is crazy. I heard they might be bringing him back. Just.
Oh, there's no way they don't bring that guy back. I'm just sad that Austin Powers 3 and Wayne's World 3 aren't the same movie. That's my dream threequel. Is just bring it all. Just give me all my favorite Mike Myers VHS tapes in one big movie.
Yeah, those movies, at least for me, did not age well. I mean, at all.
I think Wayne's World aged better than Austin Powers.
Oh, no, excuse me. Wayne's World I adore. Okay. I love that film. But Austin Powers movies.
It's a little rough. It's a little rough.
A little rough. I don't know. I can't see him doing another one. I know I've heard the same rumors you're speaking of, but I can't see it. I can't see it. Now, another Shrek, undoubtedly.
Please, we'll
probably see that. Yeah. Keeps pumping that shit out. Though there's a lot of people who adore Shrek, and I've got nothing against Shrek. It was very entertaining, very cleverly done, but...
If they had, stopped at two movies...
Yeah.
The fourth one's unreal. The one when he has a midlife crisis and time travels.
What?
I think it was Shrek 4 is... Yeah, he has a midlife crisis, so the movie is that he accidentally... Not quite like It's a Wonderful Life himself, but close, where he makes it so he never fell in love with her or whatever because he's missing being a bachelor. That's what, and then he has to obviously fix it and correct the time stream. But that's what Shrek Forever After is.
Are you fucking with us?
They've really zeroed in on what the kids want.
No, I got sucked into that on a date. Trust me, I did not want to see that, and I had to pay for both tickets, so I was extra grumpy when I was leaving. Damn. $30 back then was a lot of comic books. Yeah. Instead, it was 2 hours and 8 minutes of Shrek wondering if he could still get it with the ladies if he was single with his boys. I know.
You poor bastard.
That is miserable.
Wow.
But speaking of good mid-2000s comedies, I also gave honorable mention. And this one, I think because he really has the chops to pull it off, I would love to see Downey's character, Kirk Lazarus, from Tropic Thunder, get his own movie.
Oh, absolutely.
That would be a good one. That would be awesome.
That movie, again, is I think it's pretty underrated for how good it is. And it's a pretty well-made movie. I didn't see Platoon until after I saw Tropic Thunder, and then I thought Tropic Thunder was 10 times funnier.
Do you think they could do
but
that?
But, man, Downey...
Make him a spotlight character with, his obvious gimmick being what it is.
Well, by the end of the movie, he's not in blackface anymore. He's back in his Aussie New Zealand look.
Going to pick up the show after the funniest shit he's done is over. You know, they're going to focus on that, wouldn't they be?
Yeah, I think you'd have to pick. Yeah, I think you'd have to pick some other foil for him. There's some other part that he somehow Tropic Thunder became the monument in his life, and it wasn't really his movie. Somehow it overshadowed all his Oscars or something. So what is the part that he takes to try to? Make his one, like Daniel Day-Lewis wants to go out on top, mm-hmm. so he does Lincoln or whatever. What is the movie that Kirk Lazarus takes that he completely dives into?
Gandhi.
Loses
tons of weight. That.
Castaway or something same thing. You'd have to model it after some movie, whatever any of those insane transformation parts are. Or he tries to do Bridget Jones and Gandhi at the same time or something crazy like that. So he's just constantly gaining and losing weight. Or I don't know, maybe model him after Christian Bale at that point. But I just thought Danny was so good and so dialed in, and they have the tone of that whole world. I thought was just so funny too, that Ben Stiller's character was such a, even as crazy as he was by the end, he was just kind of the flat hero that I'd be happy for Tug to just have a cameo and then keep playing in that world some more.
I'm not the biggest Ben Stiller fan in the world, but I liked him in that movie. I thought it all came together nicely.
He annoys the ever-living shit out of me.
Oh, wow. Got some serious opinions in the house today.
I don't hate the guy. I got nothing against him. But,
contrast.
He just plays the exact same kind of
thing. Yeah, he doesn't have a lot of range.
No, it's except for when he was Zoolander. I mean, he was obviously very far apart from anything he'd ever done. But
I actually don't care much for Zoolander.
I don't either. It was kind of laugh. But
there's a David Bowie cameo, and I still can't watch the movie. That's hard for me to say.
Did you guys like Heavyweights at all?
Like Heavyweights back in the day.
I thought Heavyweights is one of his better movies, to be honest.
I think so. I think you're onto something there. You don't remember Heavyweights?
The Fat Camp? Yeah. I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, Fat Camp movie.
Did you really?
I did.
Nice.
But I don't. How did it come up?
A deli meat.
How did it come up though?
Ben Stiller's the bat.
It's a Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller's the villain in Heavyweights.
I don't remember that. Really? Really? No.
He's the whole driving Tony Perkins. Force.
It's kind of like he's all done up like Hal from Happy Gilmore. You don't really know it's him, but you can kind of tell it's him.
The last time I saw it was in the theater. I mean, I do not remember. I promise.
look up some clips because I think it's good because he's not the lead in it. So he really commits to the scenes that he's in, and you're not getting like beat over the head with Ben Stiller action the whole, like you guys are saying, that it's kind of that one note the whole time. And man, it's just a funny movie, man. That's who wrote that too? That was a good comedian too. Wrote that movie.
That's kind of like an Anchorman when he comes over with the Mexican TV station news guy.
Yeah, that's right. Just enough.
There's some decent cameos in this movie. I'll give him that.
Jake, what do you got?
I've got a really weird one. Now I know this franchise is super dead because they made that movie with Seth Rogen that bombed. But Green Hornet, you know, something that's not close to anyone's heart or mind.
What? Did you steal off my list?
No.
Seriously.
Don't fucking tell me you want Kato to have his own.
Yes, I have it. I have Kato on my list.
Son of a bitch. High five me.
I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, how cool would that be? Because he was the most badass figure in that whole mythology.
He's the one that did everything.
Yeah.
He definitely was. I'd love to see his backstory. Kato's origins.
Yeah.
What would you call that WB series? The...
Becoming Kato.
There it is.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, man. We'll think of something before
the man who would be Kato.
Lackluster, but we'll keep trying here.
Keep it mysterious.
Good pick, though.
Thank you.
Damn good pick.
Good pick on you, friend.
Thank you. I mean, I've only got four on my list, so you really put a dent in it. But... Jack, what do you got?
I was talking to Jake about this one at work, and I don't know if it would really go that far as being maybe a cooking show, but Samwise Gamgee from Lord of the Rings.
Cooking show.
Yeah, Sam loves to cook.
Yeah,
making potatoes and taters. Oh man, I don't think I could watch that. No.
That'd be pretty boring. I think not a lot happening.
Yeah. No matter what,
I just don't want to put that into the universe because, like, let's be honest, in the world of franchises, that's not impossible.
It's right. Not out
we're
of the question.
We're gonna get a decent Samwise Gamgee cooking movie before we get a good Green Lantern movie. I'm willing to put money on that. Yeah.
All right. One that's always comes up on the show before that I just stand behind and will support is the Palpatine movie.
Yeah.
Palpatine prequel film. That just needs to happen.
He is the character that should have his own spinoff.
Yes.
And yet, the one who does not.
Yeah. And probably never will now that Han Solo tanks so bad. But what'd you expect, Disney? God damn it.
Right?
Slow down. We can baby steps, small bites, you know?
Yeah.
But how about Casey Jones?
That'd be cool.
I would love to see
Casey Jones. He could hold it up, that character.
In the comic, they really started fleshing out his backstory because it was just kind of, he was just, you know, street riffraff kind of dude that started hanging out with them. It was a vigilante on his own, but no.
Someone couldn't make it in the sports world.
Right, but in the latest comic series, they made it. They introduced a character by the name of Hun in the early 2000s, who was like Shredder's first in command, great big beefy dude. It was like the head of some gang, the Purple Dragons. And in this new comic series, they made it like that was his dad. It's like so they're like worlds apart. You know, one's the leader of a gang, one's doing everything he can to stop violence. I think it would be cool to see that upbringing and that journey into rebellion.
The conflict that ensues there.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Turtleless Casey Jones comic. Yeah.
Throw a cameo in there, you know, whatever. Yeah. Be aware of them, but...
Yeah, if you listen, Nickelodeon, get the fuck on.
Probably just be Raph showing up, I would say, I think.
Yeah. Right? Ryan, we're back to you, sir.
So this would be, I think, like a sort of an out-of-time one, but I think if years ago, if they'd had the chance... I think he was just – I ended up kind of going through a mentor's list is how I almost made this list. I would have loved to see a Morpheus movie of him on his own. If I wanted to see another Matrix movie, I would like to see in the world where humanity fell to science, to machines, Morpheus is the man that suddenly finds his faith, and it's him having to illicitly dip into the Matrix to continue following this prophecy to find the chosen one.
and watching Morpheus do it, because he just, you know, all those scenes just chew scenery. Lawrence, basically, I just saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, but Lawrence Fishburne is just so great in those movies.
Yeah,
that would be an amazing.
I'd watch him dance.
Even, you know, even side just a prequel movie or something, but like a prequel trilogy, like Morpheus's first experiences with the Matrix.
Be awesome.
Oh man, yeah, you got my mind reeling. That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah, well, they did. I really liked. They did the Animatrix, that animated movie.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
it set up a kind of a cool way to make a prequel, in that the whole all of the Animatrix was about getting them the codes that led Morpheus to Neo. I believe I might be misspeaking, but I know it's basically there's a MacGuffin in the Animatrix, and you find out that MacGuffin leads them to 10 minutes. It's basically, it's almost like the Rogue One thing again, where it leads you right before the catalyst that started whatever the first movie was. But yeah, but flushing out Zion and that world of strapping in and them jumped into the Matrix, that's what I'd like to see more than, again, I think any modern Matrix movie is somehow going to end up being about the surveillance state or something else like that. And that's just not what the fun of the Matrix was the first time around for me.
And I'm really surprised they haven't tried to do a new one. Yeah. You know, since. Yeah.
Well, they announced, who was it? Michael B. Jordan was attached, wasn't he, for some sort of return to Matrix something or other? But I don't know if they're still waiting for Hurricane Jupiter Ascending to pass over.
What if he was playing young Morpheus?
Hey. I'd get behind that. Yeah.
But this was post-Creed, so I have a bad feeling he's going to be Morpheus Jr. or Morpheus' son. I never like the sons. I never do either.
Yeah.
No, me neither.
Creed's close to the golden standard for me, but outside of that, I really can't think of a time where I was like, man, I was totally over like this, like Rambo. But as soon as I met Johnny Rambo, his plucky son, I was back in for sure. Like, it's never, I don't know why this is a cliche, because it's never worked.
You know, it's so funny that comes up. I don't know if you guys remember from the early to mid-90s, a cartoon that used to be on before and after school, James Bond Jr.
No, I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
I'll have to find the theme song and throw it in here. But my God, it's so funny how this worked out. We're talking about how the sons of the main characters suck and James Bond is already. I love it. I love it.
James Bond Jr. No one can stop him, but scum always tries. Young Bond cuts through each web of spies. He learned the game from his Uncle James. Now he's heir to the name. James Bond! James Bond Jr. Look out, he's coming through. He's got a job to do while he rescues the girl. Around the world.
But yeah, that was a I think all the villains had maybe kind of spin-off characters too. Like there was a version of Jaws, and I don't remember the other villains. I just remember Jaws because of the teeth, you know.
What was it? The guy that threw his hat, I can't remember.
Odd Job.
Oh yes.
Small Task, is that his son's
Random Task.
Random Task, yeah.
Show them more.
A shoe?
I've got one that's a little on the nose. I don't know if it's too obvious, but assuming you could trim out some of the like more menial tasks, I think an Alfred movie has its place.
Especially with, I don't know, you know, in the past they've always made it like, well, he has a mysterious background, but you never really see him do anything. I don't know. I'm just thinking of the Alfred in this Gotham series.
Gotham, yeah, definitely.
And
he's a little more action-oriented. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Jeremy Irons. You'd make a strong Alfred movie as, like, the security specialist.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
I can get behind that for sure. I would have never thought about that either.
Really?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I almost didn't say, because I'm like, someone's going to beat me to it or think this is a cop-out answer.
No, not at all. And it's something I'm always curious about, especially if you, like, in the animated series, they would occasionally have, like, an Alfred heavy. I remember there was an episode where he was summoned back by one of his old, I don't know, the army buddy or what
cronies.
Kind of military they were in together or club, but they were both captured and they both had codes to some, you know, missile silo. Like, how did that happen? Yeah. How did that ever come to be?
You want to know.
Yeah, that would be cool. Anyway.
It'd be weird from him going from that kind of mysterious background to being a butler.
Yeah.
Well, we gotta settle down sometimes, James.
But then his father was a butler.
That's like the classic. It's like Shane. Did you ever see Shane? That's like a classic Western kind of trope of the gunslinger who tries to hang it up. And there's almost like a whole cliche or Western formula that is this mysterious stranger comes to town, just wants to live as a rancher and like have a normal life and be surrounded. Like he doesn't have any family of his own, and just wants to live, kind of enjoy small town, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then of course trouble comes knocking. So Shane's on AFI's top 100 movies. That's kind of the most successful one where there's this little boy who Shane comes up on the ranch. And he's like, Shane seems really cool. And Shane has all these cool tricks and like kind of troll stuff. Like he's kind of good with gunplay or something, but Shane hates violence. And then finally when trouble comes knocking, turns out Shane was outlaw, like gun toting, you know, every Westworld badass all mixed into one person. So it kind of makes sense to me. What's funny too is in pretty much every iteration of Batman, Alfred scenes are almost always some of the best parts, funny enough. So I feel like everybody's kind of an Alfred fan. You know what I mean? I really can't think of anybody who really hates the character of Alfred.
No.
How could you?
What's there to hate?
Yeah.
Right. He's just so good.
He just gives his little tips and keeps Batman a little bit centered where he should be.
Yeah.
Because he's Batman's morality.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
They didn't touch on the backstory of Michael Caine's Alfred too much,
no,
I don't think. But I thoroughly, I really enjoyed him.
Yeah, he was
amazing.
Michael Caine.
Especially in the last one when he was like trying to, you know, he saw where this road was going.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, look at him. He is a specimen. You know, you've been out of the game and this dude is like high trained. You're going to get your ass kicked. I mean, not in so many words.
Right.
But just that whole scene where he was trying
guess what happened, that precise scenario.
Yeah, exactly. The ending of that film was cherry, though. And what was it, Paris, or where was that?
I think it was Paris.
Rome or something. Oh, Paris, yeah.
That was
certainly
so
Europe,
good.
But yeah.
So
see
good.
That smile.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Ryan, I cut you off.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that guy had a... That Alfred had military experience, too, because isn't that where the Some Men Want to Watch the World Burn monologue came from?
His whole thing about...
Yes. You just said Burma, didn't you?
Yeah,
I totally forgot about that.
That's like the only line where it's referenced, but like it's so much more powerful for being the
That's
one
kind of how
line.
It always is. Yeah, totally. Even at best in the comics, there's like Bruce always saw some lockbox under his bed or something. Like just some little nugget that like there's something in there, but Alfred's packed it all away. But yeah, man, I definitely want an Alfred movie more than I want to look at this Aquaman poster, I'll tell you that much.
Seriously.
Yeah, I've been seeing little clips here and there of that new Aquaman film, and I'm not feeling it. I mean, I think the ladies are probably going to be going up for it more.
Yeah.
You know?
That eye candy effect.
I mean, it might be really good, but I didn't really care for him and I didn't care for Justice League, period, honestly.
No.
It was not good.
Never really cared for Aquaman altogether.
Nah. No. I'll wait for it to show up on DVD or something. Or at the library.
Yeah.
So, all right. One more I got here. Hit Girl.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yep.
And I think that's in the comics, they even shifted focus to where she's kind of the...
They did, well...
She was the
Kick-Ass
mentor.
Is still going, but now Hit Girl has her own series, too. And, yeah, it's good. I like it, but it's not done by Mark Millar like the main series is, which is my main attraction. Mm. He's so good. But and I think that's Romita Jr. too.
Yep. Yeah. Kick-Ass series.
Yeah. They're so good. But Hit Girl is done by someone else. They're still good comics. But to see that in film form would be amazing.
Be cool.
I've always wanted to see her like as an adult. If she's this lethal as a child. You know, as a grown woman.
You know, it'd be interesting if they played it up that even like in her, I don't know, mid-20s or something, where anyone else would be in their prime, she's been working it so hard since whenever that she's like...
Already deteriorating.
Yeah.
She's
got
cool.
shitty joints.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, like...
It's like Rocky Five.
Right. Started too early, went at it too strong, and now when she should be her strongest...
That wouldn't make a good film, though.
No. But I think it's interesting.
Still be good fighting.
That's
in
a
there,
good
probably.
Third installment in the franchise.
There you go.
I don't want a movie where it ends with her like looking
physical
over a
therapy.
Pond at a sunset or any shit like that.
Feeding the
no, she has to go to community college and get a degree and find herself. It'll be great.
Yeah,
but look,
I'm
going to
see
those
her kill people, guys. That's what I'm getting at here. Grown Hit Girl killing people. Come on.
Hit lady.
And with that, we got t-shirts. I have nothing else to say.
You like these nice smooth transitions we've been using lately?
I've given up on the transitions. I always try to come up with something clever, and it's just like,
why church it up? It's buy a fucking shirt.
Why try to put lipstick on a pig? Just buy a decal, buy a mug, buy a t-shirt.
The decals are nice, though.
They really are. Yeah, everything's really nice.
I mean, it's all nice, but I especially
Ryan
like
Ryan can contest for the mugs, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a solid mug. It does hot and cold. Can't beat it.
Here's
you get the big one?
Two things.
Did you get the big one or the smaller one?
I got the $30 one, whatever that is.
You got that's the Stein.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the big one.
Uh-huh.
It's like a 20-ounce cap or something.
Those late night writing sessions, that does it. Then it's one trip to the kitchen, two trips to the bathroom before I need to refill.
Perfect.
There you go. We are happy to hold your coffee, and good on you, sir. That's just downright decent of you.
You, too, can live this large if you go to society6.com/CandairePod.
That's it, Jake. That's exactly it. Get yourself some tasty mites. That was a good commercial.
We've got coosters for those coffee mugs now.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
See?
I got to buy me a set of those. I want to have those. I think so. I want to,
for all seasons, we're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All seasons. All right. Let's go open the door to the comic vaults. Who would like to go first? I'm not going first. I moderate this bullshit. Don't look at me.
I will go first. Because this week I would like to talk to you about Eat More Bikes. A name I still can't quite get to the bottom of. If you want to read this fantastic comic, and you do, you head to eatmorebikes.tumblr.com. Easy to find, or you could Google the phrase "eat more bikes" because there's not a lot of competition for that. for that URL.
Oh, it's taken.
Guess I'll be XX eat more bikes XX. They're generally four panels, with three that kind of set up a punchline and a fourth that circumvents the punchline with an entirely different punchline that makes very little sense. And they're phenomenal. Let me give you an example. We've got the first one here, a gentleman in a hat describing a woman he encountered. He said, "In she walked, the leggiest dame I had ever seen. Legs so long, they touched out of space. Hard cuts to a woman floating through space, clearly rotten and dead, probably for months." So it didn't quite work out for her. Another one that's pretty good. A mother and her child. And the child says, "Mama, where's Rover?" Said, "Oh, he went to live on a farm upstate with lots of other dogs." "Oh, okay, Mama." Hard cut to the dead dog farm upstate.
Oh, man.
Acres of dead dogs. And that's the kind of thing you can come to expect from Eat More Bikes. And let me tell you, it does not disappoint. So please, check it out.
When you have a name like that, it doesn't leave an impression. You're so left wide open that anything that follows it could make sense.
Primes you for strangeness.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, lately, my tastes have been geared more towards the weird. Well, that
you don't
musician.
Say.
Don't say that videos that you showed us earlier.
I'd love to imagine we'll have him on the show one day. We'll see how it plays.
Who was it again? Tell the listeners.
Jack Stauber. Who, man, since I discovered his stuff, things are different now. My life has changed. I'm like watching this shit all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know.
Oh, you don't have to apologize. We're all into our thumb.
The generational gap has never been wider.
We'll close it.
Yeah.
We'll get there. Okay. We'll get there. All right, very good, very good. So now, excuse me, wrong page. Ryan, would you like to go next?
Sure. Yeah, I had a big weekend this weekend. I finally treated myself to reading a manga series that has been on my top five to read things for like ever. And I finally, this weekend, to celebrate the success of Prometheus, I said, I'm finally going to read it. It's a manga series called Pluto, spelled like the planet. And one of my favorite things about comics is some of my favorite comics you almost can't pitch. It's just they're so well executed that they're so moving. This is a series that takes place in semi-distant future, not totally Blade Runner future, but a fair bit ahead of our own, that robots have integrated into our society. And it's following this great war in Asia where a couple dictatorships kind of join forces and then the rest of the allied forces stop them. So now peace is in the land, and a detective has discovered that in this war, seven robots were enlisted to fight. And normally robots weren't able to, like, harm other things, but they allowed these seven robots to wage war. And one by one, they all start getting murdered. So you can imagine it's sort of a dystopian kind of Blade Runner-y Watchmen kind of mechanic of the comic.
I love every element of that.
Right?
Yeah, it is just beautiful. The pacing is incredible. The, you know, kind of has those like manga interludes where you just have these like character stories that are just super, super effective. And there's a huge cameo, I think, in the second volume. So you probably have to read about like four or five chapters to get to it. That it'll take you a second to realize who the cameo is, but it was the author of this had this idea, reached out to an author of a massive, massive popular classic piece of IP, and just got this character included in the series purely out of goodwill. So it's I love reading manga because it's contained. It's one person's complete artistic vision. So if you ever want to treat yourself, it's all out. It's all available. You can go get up Barnes & Noble whenever they have a sale, or else you can go on Google and do some pirating if you want. But it's just so awesome. It's so rare that, one, things are really amazing, and then, two, they're amazing and they're worth the hype. Like, I'm officially one of the fanboys. I'm in. This series, Pluto, is just incredible. They've been trying to make it into a movie for, like, 20 years, I guess. But but it's one of these things where, because of all the different characters included in it, the copyright is very complicated, so it may never happen. But, man, it's awesome.
You know, I probably shouldn't be asking this, having a comics podcast and all, but what exactly is manga? What is it? What separates it from a normal comic?
You read it backwards.
No, totally. That's
you
it.
Read it you backwards. It. No, that's it.
If you read anything backwards, it's manga. If you read a restaurant menu backwards at Ruby Tuesdays, that is now manga. it's pretty cool. I studied this a little bit in college. So we have our American comics market. And in Japan, Japanese comics and their comic market grew almost entirely independent of ours. Their comics were started actually like similar to how ours, that they just evolved from political cartoons and newspaper strips into their own comic world that is as vibrant as our Marvel and DC is here. But the very cool thing to me is whose book was it? Hang on, I got it sitting right here. Oh man, what a perfect man! It's been so much coincidence on this call. I was just rereading this book last night. Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics, which is pretty cool to read if you ever want to read. It's kind of the seminal text on comics and the visual medium. He broke down that comic panels can really be narrowed down into one of six different kind of shots. No matter what's happening in a panel, it fits one of these six categories. And American comics, to make it easy, we'll call them categories 1 through 6. American comics are about 90% categories 1 through 3, and manga is about 80% 4, 5, and 6. Is to kind of explain how different of a visual medium they are. So they're similar in the sense that they're both comic books. Manga is just Japan's comic market. They call it manga instead of comic books. But I continue to use that term because manga is a significantly different form of expression than American comic books are.
Isn't that kind of like how anime is cartoons? It's just
sort of
Japan.
Well put, Chad. Yeah.
It means, yeah, mangas are comics, anime, cartoon.
Yeah.
I keep it simple.
Yeah, it's like a choose your own adventure book. If you want the director's cut with the mouth of Sauron, you can listen to Ryan's 5-minute rant, or else you can just watch the theatrical version and just get that version. Yes, it's sort of like that. But manga, it's actually a lot different than that. Manga has lots of eccentricities that make it different than American comic books.
All right.
The nice thing is they don't really hand off series. Check it out. It's worth it. If this is going to be your first manga, I recommend it strongly.
Are they mostly black and white? Because all the ones I've ever seen are.
It's sort of like an honor thing to get colored pages because they're all released in the compendium. Well, most of the Shonen Jump series, at least, which are all the big ones that you'd probably think of, like Dragon Ball Z or Naruto or any of that, or One Piece, they come out every week in that big magazine. That's just one chapter of each of them. So every week you pay like $6 and you get the big thing, and you get like 10 pages of each series.
I'm imagining like a very hard, like Usagi Yojimbo style kind of artwork and spread. No, yes, yeah. No.
I don't.
Maybe so. I don't know.
I haven't really looked at them much.
No, they all have their own kind of feel to them, but the character design and again their sense of a lot of like the combat in manga is where you see like what's his name, Umberto Ramos, who was on Spider-Man for a while. He's a very manga inspired artist, probably one of the more popular ones, but a lot of other people do too. But you should check. It also has its own kind of trappings and cliches and different, like, we like, you know, if, just different things like beefcake poses and stuff like that. We're like, oh yeah, that's just kind of part of comics that probably to someone else, like someone who doesn't know comics, thinks it's weird. There's plenty of weird things in manga that to an American audience you're gonna think it's very strange. Even if you know manga, you still think it's pretty strange. But if you've ever wanted to try manga, Pluto, to bring it all full circle, is definitely a mainstream, palatable, well executed manga. That they're a very low barrier to entry for you to try out manga with this book.
You know, I think I really have to, because I'm not a big manga fan, but that being said, I haven't really given it a fair shake. You know, I've sort of shied away from it. I've skirted around Berserk a few times. I feel like that's the one that thematically would connect with me, but I don't know. Berserk, it seems an imposing thing to jump into.
It really is, but the best thing about manga, here, the big thing I would say, like one of the real big difference to me is that manga has been doing for years what Image Comics has only just started doing. Like manga, there isn't really there's all these like Dragon Ball Z and One Piece and Berserk, like all these kind of classic series, but it's a creator comes up with an idea and he tells his story, whether it's 20 chapters, like some smaller series, or 700 chapters like One Piece, and that's it. People. You get to know characters become relevant, you fall in love with them, and they die. Manga feels a lot like Game of Thrones does. There's a lot more consequence, and there's still editorial edict for some of these bigger series, which is why Goku's died and come back to life like 7 times. But for the most part, there's much more consequence in manga, and there's just a lot more focus. So I find there's less filler, and it's just kind of what they always build to is some pretty really impressive stuff. Like I said, like the guy who wrote One Piece is, I think he's like 800 chapters in. I mean, there's a manga that's 1300, which a chapter is as long as an issue. So he's 1300 chapters in. And the other amazing thing too is, I mean, they still sell. I think One Piece has sold like over 100 million volumes, compared to, you know, if Batman sells 60,000 issues, they like throw a firework fiesta over at the DC office, you know.
Firework. So it's very much its own.
There it is. Got it in there.
I had to.
But yeah, I really recommend some of them. Again, it has its own camp and cliches that can be tricky for American audience to palate if you don't quite know what you're getting into. But Pluto is super, super mainstream and super palatable and a good introduction to what the medium has to offer.
Awesome.
There you have it. Very good. I'm excited to check it out. I do need to at least poke around the genre. Yeah, and yeah. I have to. I mean, right, sitting here doing a podcast about comics.
It's one of those things I used to dislike just on principle, you know, just for no real reason.
I'm manga. Like,
yeah, the only one missing out is me, you know, with that kind of attitude. So why not?
Very good. Jack, would you like to go next or you want me to?
Sure, I'll go next. Got an old comic from Vertigo called Preacher.
Full of things you can and cannot say on a podcast.
Oh, yeah. I was telling Jake about some of the cop in it. And he had said a lot of words that I would really opt not to say right now. But story itself is about there was a being that was created from the love of an angel and a demon.
Okay.
In heaven, they were keeping it under wraps because they didn't want it to get out. But it broke out and it went to Earth, and they're shitting their pants, the angels are, because it's looking for, they know it's looking for a soul, and if it ends up taking over a human, the humans are going to find out all this knowledge and stuff of the world. So the human that it ends up going into is actually, his name, Jesse Custer, the preacher. He was given a sermon one day at a packed house at his church. It's the first time it had ever been that packed. When it flew in, they described it as a comet with an infant's face. Come flying in the church, slammed into Jesse. He got knocked down, and might as well have been a nuclear explosion. Wiped out the whole town, pretty much, that was in there.
Wow.
Come to phone later on, his ex-girlfriend from 5 years prior, they were on again, off again. She was on his way back to town because she was trying to find him for some reason. I'm not that far into the story, even though I've been watching the series, but the series on TV is different. It's a little bit different.
Right.
It's based on it. There's a lot of different stuff in there. And she's running around with an Irish vampire. So there's
an Irish vampire.
He's hilarious.
I want to suck your beer.
They find out that racist. God has
nothing. Was that bad?
No. Just
I fucked it up anyway.
They end up finding out that God has left heaven, and nobody knows where he is at. So they go on a quest to to try to find him. Meanwhile, they're getting hunted by this guy named the Saint of Killers, that the angels put a hit out on the preacher to kill him. So they get the... It's called Genesis. That's the being that's inside him.
How many of these did you read? Is this like a first trade or?
I've got the whole trade. This is the first two chapters.
First two chapters.
Yes.
All right. Sounds interesting. I've always been curious about it. I'm like, if it's good enough to land its own show, it's got to right. It's got to have some redeemable quality.
I just started take the its third season too.
So. Yeah, same.
But it the well, first it, season
it
is basically
really during the heyday of Vertigo too.
Sorry. What's that?
Stepped all over you. So Stepped all over you. So that really came out during kind of the heyday of Vertigo, like post Sandman, when Vertigo was really like some prestige kind of comic book making. And again, I thought that was one of the series that was really worth the hype when I didn't read it until maybe 4 years ago. I just always heard of it like, oh man, have you read Preacher? Preacher's like the best, blah, blah, blah. Man, Preacher's awesome.
That is good.
I'll have to check it out.
It's violent and bad word heavy. All get out.
Bring it around next time.
It digital. I don't have it.
Oh, isn't that convenient? Isn't that convenient?
What a cop out.
Because I can copy and paste each page. The 350 book trade.
That's really all right. Good.
Very good. All right. Well, what I have this week is a comic book that we picked up at Wizard World Con. I think we each all got one of these from our friend Brian Lau, Staunch Ambition. And I want to thank him again for this. You know, we've had Brian on the show a few times, some to talk about this comic, others just to hang out and talk of all time topics. Was it just the three of us? Were you one of all time?
I've missed both of those, actually.
You've missed both. You've never done one.
No. I was ready for it, but
something
had come up.
Now I feel the format has to stay that way. I'm just kidding, obviously.
We've got a bunch of them coming up.
No, we're going to do another one with him. But
next 6 weeks. Oh.
Well, all right.
They were a blast, and we're going to do more in the future. But no, he gave us each issue 3 autographed, and I sat down with it and read it over the weekend. And I want to be careful, first and foremost, talking about this. Some people we have on the show are very just free-going, and just you can say whatever you want about the book. Not to say that Brian isn't, but if I remember correctly, he likes to kind of play newer stuff closer to the chest. So I want to be kind of vague with what I'm talking about here. I feel like this is fairly new, this issue here. But it's set in the future with a super advanced technology that kind of allows you to wonder, like dreamscapes, supernatural scapes. I don't quite understand.
I think his elevator pitch was like technology has advanced to the point where like the next big frontier is the supernatural.
Exactly. And in this existence, there are these beings made. They're clones of human animal splice hybrids that they call splicers, and they are simply made to serve humanity. And most of the time, these things are like mindless beings that just do exactly what they're told. But you have one by the name of Azarus, who's I hope I'm not telling too much, Brian. Forgive me if I am. But Azarus, he starts having independent thoughts, feelings, questions. He's gaining a sense of humanity to himself. And one thing about this book that I'm just tiptoeing around, again, I don't want to spoil anything. One thing about this book that really stands out is the artwork. It's so freaking gorgeous.
It's phenomenal.
It complements the story so well. And there are moments when he's questioning his own being, his own, whatever you would call it. Am I human? Do I have a God? Is there a God for me? You know, they do shots of his eyes that you can really see humanity in there. You know, it's so good. Let me see if I can open up an example here to show you.
I feel bad because I haven't read them.
Right here. I mean, look at this artwork. It's fantastic.
The expression I'm trying to reach is extraordinary.
Oh, sorry, I didn't see your hand. I was holding the book up in front of you. Right. Look at that, though.
Yeah.
And the way this comic plays out, you know, kind of like you, Jack, we've talked with Brian, had him on the show, and I know we've looked over these comics before, but having actually sat down and, like, delved into them, I have not. So it's cool to know somebody. We've known Brian for what, like a year and a half
somewhere
now?
Yeah.
And to see what's going on in this guy's head now. And I mean that in the best possible way, because this was so good and in-depth, and it's technical. I don't know how else to explain it, that you need to check it out. It's really good. It's on par with something that should be on an image shelf, I believe.
Isn't he putting together like audio tracks to read with it?
I remember something like that. He's similar. Like
scoring it, kind of.
Yeah. And I'm not just talking about this because Candare is featured on the back page of the comic book. That's just a nice little privilege. But I want to thank Brian for putting us in there. And I do strongly recommend checking out Staunch Ambition. Great book. You will not be disappointed.
The covers are eye-catching as hell, too.
Oh, the covers, as so beautiful as they are just the cherry on the cupcake of the artwork that's inside. And, you know, good artwork and a subpar story can go so far, but a great story with great artwork, man, you can't go wrong. And that's exactly that tastes great together.
I got both my catchphrases in this episode.
Good on you, buddy. Woo. I'm proud of you.
That'll be the title of this episode, catchphrase.
Yeah.
We'll think about it.
We'll just sidestep all of the incredible topics we've covered.
We'll talk about that. All right. Well, with that behind us, let's just turn our full attention right over to Ryan and talk about Prometheus again. Ryan, I want to thank you again for being back with us. And if you could start by reintroducing Prometheus to some of our listeners who may not have checked out the previous episode you were on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Prometheus is a continuation of the Greek myth of Prometheus. And for those who don't know, Prometheus was a titan who stole the flame of knowledge from the gods of Olympus and gave it to the mortal man. Which was the flame of knowledge, which they say is what kickstarted our civilization and gave us the ability to invent and create. And for that, he scared the gods, giving mankind such power. So he was imprisoned for what they thought would be all of eternity to suffer at the hands of this villainous construct of Olympus known as the Eagle. And that's all classic Greek mythology. But in my series, we flash to the modern day and find Prometheus has somehow escaped what they thought would be eternal torment. So he's rushed to Earth, excited and captivated to see what humanity and all their good graces did with his gift of endless knowledge. And he finds our immortal world with pop culture and all its flaws and problems, and quickly realizes, holy crap, someone stole the flame of knowledge, stole the thing I suffered for. And he goes on sort of a John Wick style revenge quest to hunt it down and get it back.
And boy, what a fun read that was. I definitely loved that one scene where, like you were saying, he first comes back into this world and he's realizing all this. You see him sitting on a park bench and just above him, like all like the Twitter, the YouTube, all that kind of stuff. Just weighing down.
Nonsense.
And when you even saw it in that context altogether, like that weighing on him, you can kind of like almost feel that weight a little bit yourself. Like wow, there's a lot of bullshit out there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think I put in the script, I put something on the lines of, I think he scrolls around online and sees everything that's wrong with the world. And then I just let the artist kind of do what made sense to him, and I think it just kind of spoke. So, like you said, just that universal experience of being like on your worst day, just being like, man, everything's kind of terrible sometimes, huh?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he just nailed it.
Great portrayal of that. Excuse me, I can't talk. Let me start that again. A great portrayal of that.
Well done.
Got it.
I tell you, I'm a real sucker for this concept. I love mythology. I love taking mythological stories and putting them in new settings. It's got this kind of roving, gritty, almost American Gods sort of feel.
Sure.
And I love the idea of taking something totally archaic, you know, gods. We don't live in a polytheistic world, thrusting them into the modern world, and the story just takes full advantage of that. And I don't know. It's very much my angle, you know.
Sure.
I'm always stoked.
I like it too.
Well, I think my favorite thing to write about, if I had to narrow it down, is I would say subgenre. I'm a big subgenre nerd, because one thing when I try to get people into comics, I say what I like about comics is you go to the movies and, you know, with some exceptions and some caveats, you're seeing action, horror, drama, what have you.
Right.
And comics, we just have so many little bubbles that to all of us are so kind of fully formed. Like what you just said, the idea of modernizing, like modern grounded riffs on gods is a whole subtext, sub facet of the comic book world that to us is super ripe. And you know, we could all go back and forth thinking different examples or things that have really done some fun stuff with it. So this was series was really just kind of playing with all those other things. I loved American Gods. I love God of War. Even I like that new Wonder Woman series a fair bit, and just kind of playing with it. And then also trying to find something new to bring to the space too, which was my angsty friend Prometheus.
So what can we expect now out of the third issue that was just successfully funded on Kickstarter? Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you very much. Yeah, really proud of that. We broke our all-time record number of backers, so a whole bunch of new people in the Prometheus family.
You always do well on Kickstarter,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, we're looking at that.
Yeah, and it's you know, one thing I'm really proud of is I don't promote it through any of my personal channels. I only, like, you know, this isn't me shaking down every cousin and friend or, you know, old soccer teammate I've ever had, which is no offense to any other Kickstarter person anywhere on Kickstarter. Everyone's got to do their thing. But, you know, the indie comic community is really just an awesome, awesome place. A lot of receptive people, obviously, just like you guys were the first interview I ever had all those years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah, for Lonesome's number one. You guys were the first guys. I snuck into my boss's office and talked to you guys during my lunch break at work one day.
Oh,
I was
wow.
Like, I don't want to say no to an interview, so I guess I should just... Fortunately, they all went out to lunch that day, and I was like, oh, I got some paperwork to finish up, and then I snuck into the boss's office with the good computer and talked to you guys on that.
I'm going to have to go listen to it again now with knowing that.
They grow up so fast.
You just hear someone in the background, what the fuck's wrong?
There is an ass kicking on the way.
But yeah, now we should permit issues 1 and 2, which were a single oversized issue, shipped to 24 countries, which is pretty rad, too. So we're all over the place. This place, I just had I got information to find out what it takes to ship a comic book to Kuwait. For Prometheus is going there. Yeah, all over the place. But anyway, after all those nice pats on the back, to get back to your question, so the first two issues, Prometheus met the remnants of Olympus. And man, here we go. It's that time again. A Prometheus interview. It's time for me to say Olympus has fallen in my modern world. Like, it's God. It's I can't get away from it. It's just one. It really does sound cool. And two, it's actually the only really way to describe it. So Prometheus has been meeting and having confrontations and or conversations with the various previous inhabitants of Olympus he's stumbled across. So in issue 3, he's going to get a challenge he wasn't quite ready for in the form of Dionysus, who is the god basically of having a good time. And that's not made up. That really is Greek mythology.
I thought that was me.
Oh, my gosh. That's hysterical. So he's going to run into her and so now to really ping pong from there. So this story is a lot about this guy dealing with some of his frustration, some of his anguish for what his life turned into. So in this issue, he's going to see a very different way to kind of handle pain and his thoughts on the world in the form of Dionysus, and their conflicting viewpoints on, now that Olympus is gone, how they should carry on with their future, where he's dead set on finding the flame that's come to define him, and she offers him sort of a different way of life or a different track. Also, but not to be too heavy, it also features a lot of my fan fiction for Avatar The Last Airbender in some of the paneling and some of the conflict that ensues.
You mentioned Dionysus, and I'd seen a video on your Kickstarter page, and you've chosen to portray Dionysus as a woman here. Was that done for any particular reason, or just, I personally like the idea of gods being, you know, conceptual, kind of interchangeable when it comes to appearance, gender, all of that sort of thing, but was there any specific motivation behind that decision?
It was really combing through it all. I looked at more gods' family trees and I knew what to do with. And I found that hers flickered, or well, this Dionysus as an entity flickered between male and female at different iterations, different translations I looked at. So I found that this one was the less depicted one. So it just seemed like more fresh ground. To build her character, and it just seemed like a really cool opportunity to kind of build up this stronger supporting character to go with the version of it that hadn't really been depicted before. Because the version with all of this is, you know, you don't want to fall into the trappings of, like, we got to meet Hercules, Zeus, and Apollo.
Right, and you're going through the laundry list.
Check all those boxes.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said, it's all about that subgenre and trying to really dive into this and bring something new to it, which is also why they end up at a boxed wine factory in New Jersey. But... so that was really the goal there.
That is awesome, because, you know, it's, you could have had just another pudgy guy with rosy cheeks and, you know, a laurel crown or whatever the hell, and it would have been the same image everyone's been seeing since old Disney cartoons. But I think there's something special about redefining a myth without changing at its core what makes it poignant. You know, because like the biggest pitfall with this thing, it's got to be stagnation, right? You feel compelled to portray a thing one way or the other. You can sidestep that, and you're not even necessarily taking liberties. You're just choosing a different aspect to personify. I think that's awesome, especially for this subject matter.
Well, I think with her too, it's, you know, again, a very standard storytelling trope with this is which gods in our modern world would be more powerful, right?
I'm thinking
which
ones have,
yeah. So I'm not sure if I told you guys this or not. I came up with three script ideas my last day of college, and this was one of the three. So I was in peak kind of American party culture, which is I was like, oh man, she would be turbocharged Super Saiyan 5 in our modern world.
That whole pantheon. Now tell me, and not that I think you're obligated when you touch one pantheon to hit all the others, had you considered at any point bringing in other mythologies, other cultures, or do you want to stick with the Greek Olympian aspect and keep it focused?
So this series was originally conceived. So the way I write most of my series now is I get my idea that I get all excited about and I think is the coolest thing ever, and I usually write about a 100-page document. And then I chop that up into, I see if that's 4 issues or 5 issues. And then based on my publishing initiatives and all kind of exciting things like that, I figure out kind of how to whittle it down. So this was originally conceived as 5 issues that has a clear ending. I've known the ending and what happened to the flame since I started writing it, which we will get to. It looks like in 2018, if not 2018, by probably February or March 2019. So pretty soon. And then it was always going to be, for that initial run, Greek mythology, which it's like I said, how this world, this subculture keeps evolving. God of War just kind of blew the lid off of what if we just start making them all cross yeah. over. But there is, you know, and bring our conversation full circle with sequels and side characters and whatnot. There is other things I'd like to do with it, depending how into it people are. So we'll see. But like this one, I think we were like $20 short of matching our issue one Kickstarter, which is pretty awesome too, to not have any. It's more people, and we made almost the exact same amount of money again. So if people are cool rolling with it, I'll keep talking about Prometheus and, you know, the Boatman, one of Chris's designs for issue two, and Cerberus as well, were some of my favorite designs he's done. And these guys are all, at least at the moment, are still kicking around our little world. So we shall see.
Awesome. Well, hell, we'll be there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, having just been successfully funded on Kickstarter, how soon can listeners get their hands on issue 3 if they weren't able to back the first go around?
Sure. So all my comics are fully completed before I go to Kickstarter. That's my cool slogan.
Good
pitch.
On you, Ryan.
Yes, indeedy. So now I'm waiting for all my backers, which I'm going to retweet this a whole bunch whenever it goes live. So my backers, if you're hearing this, send me your backer surveys, which should be done by the end of the week. And those are essential because everyone who backs the book goes onto the thank you page and becomes part of the Prometheus legend. That's very important to me. So they should be going to the printer on Friday, which I have my books printed domestically here in the United States of America, up in Sacramento, where I'm based in Los Angeles. So I should have hard copies of issue 3 a week from Friday. So backers will be getting their copies the week following that, which is usually I try to get them to people within 3 weeks after the Kickstarter is fully funded.
Nice. Look at that machine.
That yeah. You yep. can't get that anywhere else. Come on now. Come
screaming on. Off the press.
And then, they're still warm when you open them.
Well, then I get to start defining different games of, you know, I ship to so many different states and countries, and literally it's almost like The Purge or something. Every mailman gets to figure out his own way of making the mail happen. So usually about 10% in the back of my doorstep at some point, but they all get there. That's also guaranteed. So they all happen, and then issue 4 is out of the way, so the series is rolling. And then I don't know if I've told you guys about this much, but I have 5 series going right now, so I'm going to be launching something on Kickstarter about every 6 weeks until next June as of now.
Jeez. Wow.
Well, yeah. It's worked for you so far.
Then I'm moving to Mexico. We'll see you later. Wow, that's a lot of work.
Join a monastery, yeah. Take a vow of silence. Put it all behind.
So Prometheus 4 right now is scheduled for September with the trade, which will be all 4 issues plus issue 5, which will be an extended issue. This is the cool part about self-publishing. The finale might be 30 pages, it might be 40 pages. It's whatever I really want it to be, landing by January or February. So the nice thing, too, is that the book is very much alive. It's not going to be kind of waiting a year, year and a half for me to return from the ether with 20 more golden pages of Prometheus to throw at people.
Are you telling us Ryan gets to come over and play again in September?
It could very well be.
I am fucking down. I'm down. That's awesome.
Consider it done.
We will gladly have you back. Should you like to come back, I'm seeing that this is your 4th visit, so I think, we've done something right, to have you come back?
I'm coming for that 5-timers club. I'm a big fan.
Free sub.
Get a free sub. Damn it, you beat son ya. Of a bitch.
I beat you. I beat you. All right. Well, Ryan, is there anywhere else people should be checking you out in the meantime?
People should be following me on Twitter at Mr. Ryan Comics. That's MRRYAN Comics, COMICS. That's the best place to keep up with Prometheus. My next comic, The Crude Knight, which is launching the second week of August, which will have the first 8 pages featured in the back of Prometheus number 3. And you can hear about my other 3 mysterious series that will be rolling out through the rest of 2018 and 2019.
I can't wait to hear about them.
Damn right.
Oh, and also, you know, just to say this because there's a little crossover, I love talking to anyone else in the indie comic community or anyone that's ever wanted to make a comic book. The cool thing about the internet is that all the walls have fallen down and there's no reason we cannot talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to know about making comics, getting into comics, like I said, it was just 1.5 years ago. I was making my very first book happen. I very shyly tweeted a random podcast called Canned Air that had a profile picture of a mug that I wasn't sure what I was getting myself into.
What the fuck?
But yeah, please, I'm very active on Twitter. I love Twitter. I love what I do. So if anybody ever has questions or comments, or I haven't gotten to even have my first Twitter feud yet. If someone thinks what I'm making is absolute garbage, please let me know why I should stop making comics completely.
Let me just say to anyone who's making comics that what Ryan has just offered you here, and I'm not being funny in the slightest.
This is an uncommon thing.
It's a little chunk of gold. Like when we were starting podcasting, it was hard to find anybody who wanted to offer any assistance that didn't have their hand out wanting some money in return for it. Yeah, you can find some advice here and there, but I can't tell you how many times, even to this day, I would kill to sit down with somebody who knows what they're talking about and just ask them all the questions I have. And that's what Ryan is offering to somebody who's wanting to get into the field of comics. That's valuable, valuable information. And I advise anybody who is curious to take him up on that because, shit, we've seen his work. It's gorgeous. Yeah. It's gorgeous. So, Ryan, I want to thank you once again. And, I mean, we're going to have you on, it seems like, quite a bit here.
I think
Just let us know when you want to come on. We'll get a spot scheduled for you. It's always a pleasure. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you, guys. I always enjoy it.
Jack, what do we have on the website?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can check out our special guests, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media. Visit the Hall of Heroes to see the Wall of Justice. Check out some of the videos from our YouTube page. And if you'd like to give us a comment or complaint or just say hi, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget, we are at CannedAirPod on Twitter and at Canned_Air on Instagram.
We're at CannedAirPod on Facebook, too. We're kind of low on likes on that page. Yeah. I try to do what I can.
So what's the deal, people? Like us. Yeah.
I think we're likable.
I thought so.
We're cool guys.
We can get some yucks here and there, right?
We'll figure it out, though.
Yeah, whatever. They're gonna like us, they won't. I'm not going to try to convince anybody. Either you do or you don't, right? Failed marketing.
Real winning at it. Maybe you like us, maybe you don't. Kiss my ass.
Get a bunch of pity likes now. These guys are whining.
They're so sad.
Oh, speaking of pity, go over to on Twitter at What If Series. Give us a follow. A new series we have in the works here that we are going to hopefully be launching in the September, October area.
I would almost
say
in the chamber. This one's just about ready to go.
It's getting there. The shows, a lot of the episodes have been recorded. We have some more to go, but so it's shaping up so nice, and I can't wait for it to release. There are some who dispute the release, but that's okay. We'll learn to all get along.
I think so.
Anyway, at What If Series, check it out, give us a follow, and be on board, be in the know when that show drops. Anything else, guys?
Nope.
Nah.
All right. Well, until next time, I'm Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Jake Runyon.
I'm Ryan Little sometimes.
Only sometimes. Thanks for listening, everyone.
James Bond. James Bond Jr. Look out, he's coming through. He's got a job to do while he rescues the girl. James Bond Jr. chases around the world.
I can't wait to see this movie.
But wait, Timmy's blind. But what am I supposed to do?
Why not try a podcast?
Spirit!
All the comic and pop culture entertainment you could want in the Canned Air podcast.
Finally, a form of entertainment not fully reliant on visual stimulation.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
She's coming to town to, what was it?
Make it happen.
Let me know what you find.
Here's another.
God damn it, the Rolling Stones can kiss my ass.
Whoa.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dean Archipotis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.